Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
One thing is obviously COVID. We pulled back a lot of staff in our offices. We've had an incident management team working on this, tracking county data every day.
Robert Bonney, Undersecretary for Farm Production and Conservation at USDA, on getting the local FSA offices fully staffed.
We are at the vast majority of our offices right now are at 75% staffing, and we're moving as quickly as we can to open them up, to not require folks to have to get an appointment before they come in. So we're moving just as quickly as we can. We know how important that is. The other piece of your question is that we've also lost a few staff over the last few years, and so we're working as quickly as we can on that as well, both on the NRCS side and the FSA side, to fill those boots back, get people back in the office, and it's a high priority for us.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
I'm here today to talk about the opportunities and challenges facing American agriculture and how confident I am in a bright, hopeful, and optimistic future for American agriculture.
Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack addressing attendees at Commodity Classic in New Orleans.
But my day actually didn't start with this appearance this morning. It actually started with a meeting of G7 agriculture ministers where we had the opportunity to talk about the situation in Ukraine. And during the course of that opportunity, we had a chance to hear from the Ukrainian agriculture minister, Lyshenko. He was obviously in a bunker surrounded by sandbags. And I thought to myself, what incredible courage it takes for him to visit with us, to plead with us for support and help. And as I listened to him speak about the circumstances in his great country, it impressed upon me the importance of all of us who live in a free and democratic country, never to take that privilege for granted.
Also expressed why he thinks America is so strong.
And I believe one of the reasons why we're able to celebrate that democratic freedom is in large part because of people in this room and the hundreds of thousands of farmers and ranchers and producers that live, work, and raise their families in America. See, I think you folks are critically important to the fabric of this country, and I think what you have done and do has allowed this country to grow and expand. I believe that American agriculture helped to create an expanding and strengthened middle class over our history, which has led to America being the strongest and most powerful nation in history. I believe that we need to continue to figure out ways in which we can strengthen that middle class. You know, for far too long, I think we've had a situation where a few very fortunate folks have done well, but the rest of us have struggled. We need, as the President says, to grow this economy from the bottom up and the middle out. And I think American agriculture can lead that effort as it has in the past. I believe that it's important to understand that 89.6% of American farms do not generate the majority of income for the farm families that farm it. I believe we can do better. I don't believe that the notion that the only way to succeed is to get bigger or get out is not the right way. I believe there's a better way. And I believe that that better way starts with developing more new and better markets that allow our producers and rural America to get more of the value and the wealth that you all create.
And he believes the future growth lies in trade missions.
We'll sponsor 4 additional trade missions in 2022. We'll travel to the UK and London in June. We'll go to the Philippines in Southeast Asia in July. We'll travel to Kenya in October and to Spain in November. And the goal is to basically expand opportunity, to make sure that we're in a position to trade.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
With the surge then in agricultural prices and profits that began in the second half of 2020, farm incomes continued to accelerate rapidly, remained high through 2021, and competed very much with the levels that we saw in 2010 to 2013, which may have been a time that many producers in agriculture thought would not be replicated.
Nathan Kaufman is the Omaha branch chief of the Kansas City Federal Reserve, speaking recently at USDA's Ag Outlook Forum.
So we saw those values continue to increase as it relates to farmland, as it relates to agricultural prices, definitely concerns along the way that were tied to the pandemic, but also agricultural credit conditions that continued to improve and recover dramatically. Toward the end of 2020 and through 2021, many of our contacts indicated that producers were, for example, using the increased revenue and income to pay down debt and maybe ease further some of the financial stress that had been building beforehand. What we've seen most recently now as it relates, for example, to farmland values, just to give a specific example, is the latest data that we've collected showing about a 25% increase relative to a year ago in farmland. So those have continued to strengthen, even setting new records, and much of that would not have been expected either before the pandemic or the first couple of months of the pandemic.
Kaufman also explains why there's optimism in ag.
Economic activity over the past 2 years has been tied in various ways to the pandemic. And as I noted earlier, the contraction associated with that pandemic was severe in 2020, but also very, very brief. We've seen that economic activity rebound sharply, and there does appear to be some momentum. One of the strongest increases that we've seen in many years, for example, in real GDP in 2021, following what we knew to be a decline in 2020. So the first to recognize as a sign of optimism is this broad momentum in U.S. and global economic activity. A second measure, though, that I would point to is generally how households might be positioned to be able to continue to propel some of these gains in the broader economy. And here it does seem that households appear to be fairly well positioned. I'll offer a couple of data points to support this. One, recognizing that for the most part, labor markets are very strong. Unemployment sits at 3.9%. We're seeing wages rise at a pace that we haven't seen in quite some time, at about 5% in the most recent data. Consumer spending, and we know that the U.S. is largely an economy that's driven by consumer spending, well exceeds the level that we had been prior to the pandemic. And moreover, households seem to be sitting on a fair amount of cash, where the savings rate compares very well with where we had been in 2019. So households also seem to be in a strong position. The third that I would highlight, and this list is certainly not exhaustive, is to recognize that similar to households, farm businesses are also positioned relatively well. As I mentioned earlier, working capital levels, which had been somewhat depleted in the years prior to the pandemic, have largely been restored. Many producers are in a strong position to service the debt that they are using, where they see opportunities for further advancement. And many producers are even using cash to finance year-to-year operations, whereas prior to 2020, many would have been relying increasingly on financing to operate from 1 year to the next. And then, of course, land values. We look at land values, and I've mentioned this several times, as an important indicator for the financial health of agriculture, and there, too, with land value sitting at record levels, represents a positive picture. So there are reasons to be optimistic, but as with any of these pictures, there will be some notable risks. And as I would argue, many of these will likely be tied to the broader economic developments that we're tracking.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
So it's kind of broken up into two sections. One's a policy side of corn policy, and the other one is a large trade show where industry gets together, you know, shows their new innovations for the year. Farmers can get together and, you know, either lick their wounds or pat each other on the back, talking about the upcoming year and the past year.
Russell Williams is a Texas Panhandle corn producer on what Commodity Classic is.
You know, yeah, absolutely. And every farm is going to be different, and every region of the country is going to be different. So there's stuff here that I might not ever use on my farm, and then there's stuff here that I, you know, might exclusively look at. But that's the great thing about a show like this. They have something for everybody. You know, it really kind of, you know, I get interested in something that I've never seen before, and I go up there and I'll start asking questions of the vendor, and then, you know, a farmer from the Midwest will come over and it's like, oh yeah, I love this piece of machinery. You know, it works great in my farm. I use it, you know, it could be a certain type of fertility machine that I've never seen before. But no, it's a fantastic time to get out and look at not only machinery, but there's a lot of ag tech innovation stuff here. Soil amendments, you know, new ways to manage nutrients. It's a really all around a fantastic trade show.
Though he is a corn farmer, he does talk about the diversification on his farm.
So it's exactly changed. It's become more diversified over the past couple of years. Corn, of course, is still king in the area. Over the last 5 or 6 years, cotton has really moved in. There's a lot of new innovation in cotton varieties that allowed them to be quicker. You know, being north of I-40, like, we have a really kind of short window to do that, and we really need short season cotton crops to make a crop up there. There's a lot of wheat. There's still a lot of cattle. Sorghum, seed, milo. It's a really pretty diversified area.
Right now, the entire state of Texas is in drought. How important is water?
Water is our number one natural resource. You know, if we don't have the ability to pump, we can't consistently grow a crop. You know, our average rainfall, they generally say, is about 18 inches a year. It might be 22 or it might be 2. And so without that, the ability to pump water out of the aquifer, the area is pretty a risky area. And so, like, our water management is spot on. It's as efficient as we can. We use all center pivot irrigation. We manage our systems with data. We have computers that we run to make sure that we're putting out the right amount of water at the right amount of times.
2021 started off similar to this. Speaking of that, he says it was a great year.
So my 21 crop was absolutely phenomenal. We had a decent growing season. We were nice and cool early on, had some good moisture. The corn really loved that. I had a really good wheat crop. We had a fantastic growing season, wheat crop going in through from 2020 into 2021. It's a hard red wheat crop. But it was a really good crop. Prices were decent. They had already started ticking up. And so 21 was a profitable year for us.
And like everybody else, he says there are challenges ahead. But like most others, he says there are challenges ahead.
So, like, front of mind, in January of 2021, I locked in all my fertility needs. And so I was paying, you know, around $250 a ton for liquid nitrogen fertilizer. I priced the same fertilizer in August of the same year at $550. You know, today, if I wanted to buy that same stuff, it would cost between $650 and $700 a ton. Things have changed. Prices have changed, too. Prices have gone up. That's absolutely true. But, like, you start looking at our input costs, and we're anywhere between 200 and 300% more expensive to put in the exact same crop.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Before the trade war and before the pandemic, the United States represented roughly 25% of all exports of agricultural products into China. In other words, 25% of their agricultural imports came from us.
Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack at Commodity Classic in New Orleans. What about today?
During the course of the trade war, they began a systematic process of reducing their reliance on the U.S. We entered into an agreement to restore some sense of balance. They began to buy product again, but it all only represents 18% of what they import. They have diversified. And I think that's a message that we need to take to heart, that as important as that market is, it can't be the only market. We've got to diversify ourselves. We've got to do more opportunity and create more opportunity outside of China.
And he says that begins with trade missions.
So when you look at trade, the keys to trade, I think, are presence, people, and promotions. The ability to have people stationed in market opportunities, daily communicating the message of American agriculture, of its stability, its safety, its sustainability production methods, its innovation. I believe it's important for cooperator groups to figure out ways in which they too can be present in these markets, telling the story from an individual perspective of what happens on your individual farms, so that people in those markets understand and appreciate who they are buying from, the values that motivate you, the stewardship that you are engaged in. And I believe we should look for ways in which we can showcase trade shows and other opportunities what we act to offer the rest of the world. So just a month or so ago, I was in Dubai for our first trade mission in 2 years, first face-to-face trade mission. We had 25 companies. We had 8 state agriculture commissioners or directors or representatives from those offices. We had cooperator groups, many of which are represented here in the Commodity Classic, and we had regional cooperators. They were there for about 4 or 5 days, and in that 4 or 5 day period, they had 300 meetings with individuals not just in Dubai, but in the Middle East and North Africa, telling your story, telling the amazing, productive, innovative, sustainable story of American agriculture. And I'm confident from those 300 meetings we'll be in a position to sell more. We had a record export year last year, $177 billion, shattered the previous record by roughly 14%, and we expect and anticipate a record export this year. But as we expand our capacity, as we have more presence, more people, and more promotions in those countries, we can expand opportunity in Asia, we can expand opportunity in Africa, we can expand opportunity in the Middle East, we can expand opportunity in Latin America and South America, and we can tell the story of American agriculture globally.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
As we sit here today, you know, top of mind on everyone's discussion is the issues around Russia and Ukraine, and these are seismic disruptions, the likes of which we have not seen in modern history, and so we're going to be talking and feeling about these effects for years to come, and so I'll try and kind of unwrap some of these issues.
That's Kevin McNew, chief economist with FBN on the current state of ag.
Further, we think grain prices will smash record highs in 22. We were already on the path to achieving record highs before the war outbreak 2 weeks ago, and so I think the war only further exacerbates many of the underlying issues that we were already facing in agriculture and the world as we move forward. U.S. farmers, as they make decisions this spring and try to decide corn, soy, wheat, cotton, you know, that calculus that they're normally doing, I don't see any of that derailing the price strength we've seen. We are in a new paradigm of big losses of agricultural supplies from a major growing region in the Eastern European area. And so while we will certainly talk about that and farmers will think about it and make those decisions, we're in a paradigm where certainly I think prices will be moving higher for the foreseeable future. And then finally, you know, farm cost escalation, which really started in earnest back in the fall, starting kind of with fertilizer, a lot of issues around farm chemical prices. Those issues have not let up in the last months. And as we get closer to spring, we see no further signs that they will back down or improve for farmers. So farmers are going to feel pinched from a cost and inflationary standpoint, and I expect that to be fully in place as we go into 22. Profitability will probably be a little less than what it was last year. Last year in 21 was a very strong year for farmers in terms of profitability. Where we're at today will look a little more constrained, but there is the potential for commodity prices to accelerate as we get into the 22 growing season and help profitability.
So how did we get to this point?
Certainly, the last 2 weeks has put a lot of attention on grain markets, but really it's a story that's been evolving for really the last 18 months, starting back in about August 2020, when we saw $3 corn prices, we saw $8 soybean prices, and those prices today are sharply different. from where they were just a brief time 18 months ago. 18 months ago, we were just coming out of COVID. We were seeing the ethanol industry, fully derailed from the lockdown. And around that time, we saw some supply disruption, supply cutbacks. Iowa was a big area where we saw weather damage from a derecho storm. Fast forwarding, we've seen strong demand out of China. We've seen biodiesel really kind of be a new and interesting demand story in agriculture. And also, episodic droughts have persisted throughout the globe in major producing areas. Our neighbors to the north in Canada, a lot of the farmers we work with at FBN suffered massive droughts. My home area in Montana, our farmers there were devastated by droughts. This season right now, South American farmers are dealing with gripping drought. And so, the backdrop of strong demand and major supply areas facing drought really kind of put us on this path for the last 18 months that saw sharply higher prices. But then again, 2 weeks ago, the world shifted under our feet with the outbreak of war in the world's breadbasket between Russia and Ukraine. And you can see quite clearly what happened to wheat prices. And wheat has become, if you will, the barometer of war tension in that region.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
There's clearly a lot of attention around competition.
Kurt Blades is Senior Vice President of Ag Services at AEM, the Association of Equipment Manufacturers.
And I think some of it is clearly warranted. I mean, we look at the concentration of the packing industry. I think we recognize the fragility of the food production system is very real. But I think some of it also we have to recognize when we talk about, the cool technology that we're sharing here, that comes at a cost. And so, I believe in a good free fair market and for good technology to win out. And I want to have a good spot for technology to participate, whether that's from a startup company or whether that's from an incumbent OEM. I think what we find and certainly on the equipment space, it's ripe. It's ripe for innovation, and you'll see downstairs a ton of companies you've never seen before. Whether it's on the equipment side or on the crop protection side, there's a lot of room for new people to enter into the marketplace, and they're being funded because there's a ton of money pouring into the industry. So that's very exciting from a kind of a competition standpoint. It seems to me like I think John says nothing cures high corn prices like high corn prices, and nothing cures innovation like a little bit of concentration, and we're seeing that happening downstairs. Now, to address the issue around right to repair, and I'll kind of, because it's closely related to that, frankly, we talk about this really cool innovation, which is great, but it also has intellectual property built into it. And for a company to invest in that same intellectual property, it's got to be protected in some way, shape, or form. So we want nothing more than for farmers to maximize their uptime, and we know that farmers have been working on their own machines for years. That's not changed at all. However, what has changed a little bit is that environmental regulations for engine emissions or safety regulations to ensure safe operation or things that protect that intellectual property are built into the way machines run today. And so most of the repairs can be done by a farm individually. It's no question. But some of those things do need to be left up to a professional. I can't program a computer. I have no business programming a computer. I leave some of those things to professionals. But there's a lot of things that I can do on my own, like plug in a mouse, and that's good stuff too. So it's a complicated debate that has entered into the public sector, and we look forward to having more and more of these conversations with grower groups, because it's one that we can all solve together.
Steve Sinsky is CEO of the American Soybean Association.
Every grower that I know and that I've ever talked to does want robust competition in the marketplace, and they welcome that because they know that that leads to better products, better pricing there. And so we want to have that both in the marketplace. We want to have that vis-a-vis in terms of imports. Some are needed as well for that competition, and you can't stifle the imports. Sometimes are needed to make sure that there is robust competition in the domestic market, and so we welcome that. The other comment I would make, and it gets back to what we've talked about a couple of times here, is innovation. That innovation is key, and that's very much a strong message that we continue to send to meet the twin challenges of not only feeding a growing world population, but also addressing the climate. And part of that in innovation is having the right regulatory environment that welcomes innovation as well. We need to make sure that the regulations that are being set up, whether it's for biotech, crop protection products, gene editing, other technologies of the future, are such that it welcomes the new entrants that can come into the marketplace, and we're not establishing regulatory barriers so high that only a few companies can afford to meet them.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
It was a great year. It really was. And one of our key messages from the start of the pandemic, going back 2 years, was that the United States has the most reliable grain export system in the world. And you saw countries really flock to that and know that, you know, in times of uncertainty, they can count on us for reliable and quality shipments.
Ryan LeGrand is CEO for the U.S. Grains Council.
But when you talk about the last year, it really has been a great year. We've got a record. We just came off of a record year for corn exports. It was close to 70 million tons that we exported. Distillers grains came up as well to about the 12 million ton mark. And sorghum took off again. You know, we really had issues with exporting sorghum there during the trade war with China. China's back in the market for U.S. sorghum, and it's been great for our industry.